And 7 minutes past 1 o'clock, it is today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper, along with Bonnie Byrne. We had some beautiful weather this weekend and today.
Indeed we did. We do.
Indeed. Well, today we get the lowdown on the job of firefighter and paramedic. Of course, they see it all. With us is a veteran of the Miami-Dade Fire Department. He's Saul Wiesenthal. He's retired now and has written a memoir of his 25 years of service. It's called, Oh, So You're a Fireman. Welcome to you, Saul Wiesenthal. Thanks for coming down.
Thanks. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Saul. Good to have you here. Thanks for your many years of service, too. What made you decide to do this? You put yourself in harm's way. You became a firefighter. Was it a childhood dream?
No, actually, I never even thought about it when I was growing up. My dad never brought me to fire stations or gave me fire trucks. But I just met a friend of my sister's when I was about 24, and he was a fireman for the Gables Fire Department. We talked at length, and I went to spend the day with him at one of the Gables Fire Department stations. And I followed in my car behind the truck when they would go on calls, and I thought, yeah,
that
looks
was
like
it.
A good job.
Well, you were a teacher for a while.
Right. I substitute taught for Dade County for 3 years.
So in your introduction, you say that although you were part of both this International Brotherhood of Firefighters and this long tradition, you often considered yourself an outsider in the fire department. Why was that?
Well, first of all, I'm basically vegetarian, which goes against the grain. And I was never in the military like most of the other firemen, so it was sort of hard at the beginning to take commands from guys who maybe didn't know as much as I knew. And when I first got on, most of the firemen were military and not college educated, so I came from a different group.
Has that changed?
Yeah, now it's changed. Yeah, because not as many military guys go into it now, just because we used to get 5 bonus points if you were in the military, and that 5 bonus points on the entrance exam was enough to get you hired.
Tell us about that. What's entailed in this education and mental and physical training to become a firefighter and paramedic?
It's a civil service exam, 100 question exam, and they take the highest scores, and you get extra points for being a Dade County employee and for being in the military or even a disabled vet.
Hmm.
And then once you get called, if you score high enough, then we go through a physical exam. And when I took the physical exam, it was much easier. And now it's more related to fire department skills.
And you mean it wasn't when you took it?
Well, when I took it, it was just running and swimming and pull-ups, and it had nothing really to do with fire-related activities. And then when women started getting hired, they changed the physical exam, and because a lot of them couldn't pass it. So they changed it, and now it's changed completely.
And how often are the physical skills reviewed? Is it a yearly physical that you have to go through? Or?
No, it used to be voluntary. So we could just go take it if we wanted, and the guys who were maybe addicted to things, they wouldn't go take it, so they wouldn't get caught.
So you mean you don't have to be in tip-top shape to remain a firefighter?
No. There's no physical requirements once you get hired.
Huh. That's surprising. They certainly look like they're in pretty good shape.
Most of us are, but actually, they don't want us to do too many sports on duty because they're fear of getting hurt. I was once playing volleyball at one of the stations, and I broke my ankle. And we had to write it up as...
So that's workers' comp.
Right. But we wrote it up, not that I was playing volleyball, but right on we were just doing physical training or something.
Well, in a way you were. Yeah.
So tell us more about the experience of Fire College. Was it sort of a boot camp?
Yes, I guess you could consider it that. The one thing I remember, we all had to get real short haircuts. And that was like the hardest thing. And we did physical training in the mornings, but it wasn't hard. We'd run maybe a mile and do some pull-ups and push-ups. And then we half the day was devoted to firemen skills and techniques, and the other half English and writing skills, because firemen have to write a lot of reports. And a lot of the guys weren't very good at it, so we did a lot of training in English grammar and writing.
That's interesting. Now, let me understand this. Are all firefighters trained as paramedics? And are all paramedics and or are all paramedics trained right. as firefighters?
Right. What, the second is true. All paramedics are firemen, but not all firemen are paramedics. About a third of us of firemen are paramedics. And each city is a little bit different, but most major cities have the paramedics and firemen combined in one department. But some major cities, I think in New York, they have fire department is separate from the medical EMS rescue department.
Yeah, why is it combined here?
It just started out that way. It was just strictly years ago a fire department, and then we just started incorporating the rescue part. And they tried to break us apart about 20 years ago. The county thought it would be cheaper if they broke us apart. But the union, we fought real hard to keep them together.
What's the percentage of... say paramedic calls versus fires?
Oh, it's 80-90% medical calls. And some of the guys kid around, they say we should call it the Miami-Dade Rescue Department, not the Miami-Dade Fire Department.
Fire Rescue. You mentioned women before. When you joined, what year was it?
1978.
So what was the percentage of women then?
Zero.
Zero. There were no women. Okay. That's what I would have thought. And were they accepted after? I mean, how did that work?
At first, they weren't. You know, it was a boys' fraternity, and and the first few women had it pretty rough by some of the guys. Some of us, you know, if we just accepted them.
Some hazing.
Well, but
some of the guys gave them a hard time. But then when more and more women got hired, we couldn't kid around with them like we could kid around with the guys, you know, play practical jokes on them and stuff. They would start complaining about the equal opportunity and harassment. So a lot of the rookie pranks that we got away with years ago, we can't get away with now.
Well, what's it like now for women? What percentage of...
I think it's about 20%.
And how are they treated now?
Oh.
Just like equals?
Equals, yes. And a lot of the chiefs now are even women. And the captains and lieutenants. So, yeah, it's equal.
What's an average number of calls per day to a firehouse? Just ballpark figure.
Yeah, I would say the average would be between 5 and 10. Some stations average less than one call a day, maybe in sunny North Bay Village or the Port of Miami or Fisher Island. And other stations in Liberty City could average 25 calls a day.
So there's a lot of probably hurry up and wait activity, of course polishing the equipment and making sure everything is ready to go.
Right. We do a lot of station maintenance, equipment maintenance, and we take a lot of classes actually, the paramedics especially. We go to Jackson Memorial.
For updates.
Yeah, continually.
Continuing education.
Yes, continuing. Because especially in the medical field, things are changing every year. It's a big difference when I first got on until when I retired.
You know, I was thinking, Saul, you were in still a firefighter in 2001. A couple of things. Were you called up to New York?
I wasn't. I could have volunteered to go. I think maybe a dozen guys went up there. And we can always volunteer to go around the country. And
you can.
But, you know, I thought a lot about 9-1-1, 9-11. And, you know, it was just, I wondered a lot about what I would have done going into those buildings. Mm-hmm. And after thinking about it for a long time, I realized I would have known it was too risky and too dangerous. And probably for guys were going up with hose lines. I mean, there's no way you're going to put out a fire like that with a hose line. But after thinking about it, I would have gone with my buddies. You couldn't leave your buddies behind.
I was thinking, though, also how the stature and the public perception of a firefighter has changed really dramatically since 2001. Did you experience those changes here
as well? Yeah, for the first couple years afterward, people would talked to us about it and mentioned things, and yeah, I felt it for the, but now it's sort of died off. And
I don't know if that ever dies off. Do you think it does, really? Well, you should know, I guess. I can't. It just seems like people, they have a different
respect for us. Yeah, I guess so. But especially after the first couple of years.
Mm-hmm. We're speaking with Saul Wiesenthal. He's a native Miamian and a 25-year member of the firefighters and paramedics. His book is entitled, Oh, So You're a Fireman. And we're going to take a short break on today's topical currents, and we'll be right back.
And it is today's topical currents, Monday edition. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, and also veteran Miami-Dade firefighter Saul Wiesenthal. He's retired now after 25 years of service, and he's written a book called Oh, So You're a Fireman. If you'd like to join in with a comment or question, you're certainly welcome. That number is 1-800-743-9576. 1-800-743-WLRN. And also email, if you're a little shy, that's radio@WLRN.org. And, of course, we have the Twitter, Bonnie.
We have the Twitter, and that's at Topical Currents.
Saul Wiesenthal, what's the, how did you come across the title of the book, Oh, So You're a Fireman? Is that something that's common when you meet people?
Well, especially ladies, yes.
Oh, so you're a fireman. Oh. Yeah.
And I wanted to keep the book lighthearted and humorous, so there's no sensationalism in it and heroism, you know, that I talk about. So I just wanted to show people that it was a lighthearted book, and yeah.
Even though I'm sure you've saved many lives, you don't view yourself as a hero?
No.
Well, were you ever in a situation so dire, not like 9/11, obviously, but where you could have lost your life?
There was a couple fires. I was on the rescue most of the time, so I didn't fight as many fires as the guys on the engines. But the last 6 years of my career, I did work on the engine. But when I first got on, there were a couple calls that, yeah, were very, very dangerous. And I knew they were. There was one in particular. It was in Eckerd's warehouse on Coral Way. And there was nothing to be saved. It was an arson fire, so there were a lot of different fires in this warehouse and just shelves of boxes and boxes. And it was really, really hot. And we went in, apparently for no reason, and just to squirt water. We couldn't even see the fire. And I tugged at my captain's shoulder, and I said, you know, let's get out. And he said, well, just another couple minutes. And we waited another couple minutes until one of our bells went off, signaling low air in our self-contained apparatus, breathing apparatus.
And then, so if the oxygen depletes to a certain level, you're warned.
Right, in our tanks.
Okay.
Right, not in the atmosphere, but.
Oh,
but
okay.
I could just tell it was just super hot. And so finally we got out, and before the next crew could come in, we heard an explosion. And the roof had caved in, had burned through, and right where we were standing, I guess when we were in there with spraying the cold water on the fire, it was keeping the atmosphere a little bit cooler. But as soon as we left and the heat built up, it vented the roof and the oxygen poured in, and it was an explosion.
You mentioned that was an arson fire.
Yes.
Is there a difference, or what are the differences between an arson fire and a fire that starts naturally?
Well, usually an arson fire, it's set in a few different places. It's not just one origin.
I see.
So it's
bigger.
It's bigger, and it's at the beginning, it's burning in a lot more places.
You mentioned in the book that there's a big difference between what we see on police dramas or fire scenes versus the real thing. What are the differences?
Well, the main difference is the smoke. On the fires on TV, they're usually gas fires, propane fires like you see in a fireplace, giving off no smoke. In a real fire, it's so smoky you can't see anything. And on TV, you see the guys running without a self-contained on and looking for children tucked in the corners and picking them up and running in between the flames. I mean, that never happens.
What is that like, all that smoke? And you say you can't see anything, so how do you know what you're doing, where you're stepping, where you're going?
It's hard. We call them man traps. All of us have fallen down, sunk in living rooms and walked into things, and hopefully we don't walk over the edge of the roof or through a door that just goes to nowhere. But you have to feel your way. And the way we find a fire, usually you can see an orange glow. But we've been tricked before. One of the guys once saw an orange glow, and he opened up the nozzle, and it was just an orange curtain. And he wrecked the whole living room, and the fire was in the back bedroom, just a mattress on fire. But you have no idea. And so if you see an orange glow, you have to just keep getting closer to it until you feel the heat. Then if you feel the heat as you get closer, then you know it's the fire.
Describe the protective gear that you use from head to toe when you're going into a serious fire. What kind of equipment are you loaded down with?
Well, it's pretty heavy. The self-contained is the heaviest thing. It probably weighs 25 pounds it's like a scuba tank. It's filled with just compressed air, not oxygen, but compressed air. And we have a face mask that covers our face and a couple warning devices. If we're inactive for more than like 10 seconds, a loud piercing noise goes off in case one of us goes down and can't move. But we have steel-toed boots. We have bunker pants made from, people think they don't catch fire, but they'll catch fire. They're just heat resistant and a little bit flame resistant.
Like asbestos fiber?
Well, no, it's different types. Yeah, that's too toxic. At the airport, they use more asbestos equipment, the silver coats that you see them wear, because they have more dangerous atmospheres.
So all in all, you have, what, maybe like 50 pounds of gear? Or?
Probably close to it, yeah. And an interesting thing is when we first got on, they told us our helmets didn't cover our ears, and our coats, the collar would go up and not cover our ears. And they told us that you wanted something exposed, so if the heat got really, really bad, you would feel it in your ears.
You mean so you would know to leave?
To leave, right. Or you know to be really careful and, you know, explore your options. But as the years went by, we got these hoods that covered our whole face, our necks, our ears, and you couldn't tell. And I never used it. I used to use that hood more when I went skiing out west than I did in a fire, because it kept me warm while I was skiing. But all through my career, I always left my ears exposed just so I could tell.
You know, I was thinking firemen put the lives of others before their own, right?
Yes.
But you have to you have to preserve yourself in order to help others.
Right.
So how does that balance sometimes?
It's difficult. We're taught that if a fireman gets in trouble, it just complicates the issue, then we have to send firemen in to save the firemen besides the other people. So it's a delicate line.
Yeah, I would think so.
Our telephone number, if you'd like to join in with a comment or a question, we're speaking with former Miami-Dade Fire Department firefighter Saul Wiesenthal. He's written a book called Oh, So You're a Fireman. Our number, 1-800-743-9576. 1-800-743-WLRN, or email, that's radio@WLRN.org, and by Twitter, it's @topicalcurrents. First up, we have Ginny in Redland. Hi.
Hi. I'm just calling. My husband's a firefighter. He's been a firefighter he's going his 26th year now, and I just wanted to make a couple of points with you guys. He runs on average about 15 calls. There's no hurry up and wait. He literally is always out there in the field most of the time, and they're doing drills and preparing equipment, like you said, Joe said earlier. But the other thing I wanted to make a point of, because I didn't want people to sit there and think that the firemen are just sitting there waiting for something to happen. But the other thing I wanted to make a point of is they also suffer, I would say, post-traumatic stress. I tell my husband, don't bring the stories home, you know. There have been stories where he has been to fires and they've had bars on the windows and they've had to pull out babies' bodies, little kids, you know, little toddlers' bodies that are all burnt and very stressful. There was another call I remember, and this is when I had to tell him, please stop bringing these stories home, where he went, where someone had gone up, driven up under a semi, and his skull was cut off and his brain was exposed. So I just want you guys to realize, and these guys run calls all day long, the worst problem of the firefighter is sleep deprivation.
Saul, did you want to comment on?
Yes. I do write about, it's part of the deal, waking up at night and going on calls. And that's one of the worst parts of the job and the thing that you really have to consider if you want to be a fireman. The other thing, everybody handles the stress in different ways. Some guys like to talk about it, but Jenny's right. Most guys don't like to talk about it. And that's one of the reasons why I wrote everything down. It was my release from the stress.
I've read that police officers have tremendously high divorce and suicide rates. Does that transfer to the firefighters also?
Suicides, yes. Jenny? I don't know so much about
I think
divorce.
They do have I don't know what the rate is, but I hear about many different divorces. I don't know what the percentage is.
But the suicide rate is high.
Suicide rate is high?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
I can name 10 guys who killed themselves in the last 25 years.
10 guys?
Yeah.
Oh, and I also, I don't know if this is true, but I've heard of late that the rates of cancer are higher, but I don't know if that's,
Oh, that's definitely true.
From
yes.
smoke
oh, he
inhalation.
Says that's definitely true. Yeah, my husband is Eric Benneby, Saul. He says he knows you.
Yes, sure.
Anyway, I'll let you guys go.
Okay, thanks for calling.
Bye-bye.
Well, let's talk about that getting up at the night. How long are the shifts? You say they're sometimes 24 hours?
Right. We all work 24-hour shifts if you're responding to calls in the station. In training or the administration have different shifts, but the actual firefighters in the stations, we work 24 hours and then have 48 hours free.
But how safe is that? I'm thinking also like in the medical profession, nurses, doctors, there's been some talk of that changing
yes.
because of the dangers involved in working
right.
that kind of a shift.
It's a complex situation. The reason it started out like that was years ago before we had self-contained breathing apparatus, the firemen would their bodies would build up with carbon monoxide from going in the fires, and they would actually need 2 days to get their bodies clean again before they could go back to the station. So it's a tradition. There's no other reason than that why we have shifts like that. And it's a good shift. And a lot of the guys become firemen, and that was one of the main reasons I became a fireman was because of the shift work.
But doesn't it impair your performance?
Well, we take naps in the afternoons from 1 o'clock to 3 or 4. We can take a nap if we want. And it's funny, but it really doesn't impair us on the calls. It's hard getting up and getting to the call, but once we're on the call and we see the situation, we respond. The adrenaline kicks in, and a guy, I don't remember ever having a guy misperform or do anything wrong because he was tired.
Well, we're going to take another break on today's Topical Currents. We have calls and emails, and we'll get to them after we take this break. We're speaking with Saul Wiesenthal. He's a retired firefighter and paramedic, 25 years of service. His book is Oh, So You're a Fireman. Stay with us.
And we return to this today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, and retired firefighter Saul Wiesenthal. His book is Oh, So You're a Fireman. And if you'd like to join in, we have some lines open, 1-800-743-9576. 1-800-743-WLRN. Email, I imagine we have a couple of those, Bonnie.
We do.
radio@wlrn.org. Why don't we take an email?
Deanna wants to know, why do guys always bring, or maybe women also now, bring their fire trucks on rescue calls? Seems like a waste of gas and resources. That's her first question. And her second question, are the requirements physically the same for women?
Yeah, I'll answer the second one first. Yeah, the physical requirements are identical for both men and women.
But you said it's changed since
then. It's changed, but it's still the same standard to get hired.
Okay.
Once we're hired, then there's no more requirements.
Right.
And the first question, it's a good question. A lot of people ask me that. The reason is about 10, 15 years ago, we went to a priority system for prioritizing calls. So the ones that aren't so critical, you know, the sprained ankles and the cut fingers, calls like that, they send a fire truck because the rescue used to respond on them and they were running 80, 90% of the calls. So after a long time, the fire engine started responding on the simpler calls. The other reason is if the rescue is out on a different call or on the way to the hospital with a patient and there's an emergency in that territory, the fire truck will go first and give the first aid until a rescue can come. But these days, most of the fire trucks are actually ALS, which means advanced life support equipped. They have paramedics on the truck. They have all the equipment. They can do everything a rescue can do except transport. So that's why you see fire trucks responding, and it doesn't mean it's a lower level of service.
Mm-hmm.
Let's take another call or two. We've got Doug. He's in Coral Springs. Go ahead, Doug.
Hey, how we doing? Definitely, thank you for your service. My question is kind of in regards to, like, compensation and also the day's work. I got a couple of good friends are firefighters, and I'll tell you, their schedule, I'm jealous. I mean, that one day on, 2 days off. They even have things called, like, Kelly Weeks, if you know what that is. But my real point is just to the pensions and stuff. You had mentioned, you know, earlier about, you know, the labor union, you know, you had to unionize. You know, with these budget cuts to our counties and all things like that, I really don't ever see, you know, a police officer's pension, a firefighter's pension being touched. You know, any type of budget cuts, it kind of falls on the teachers and other public service workers, parks, recreation, stuff like that. But definitely, I don't mean to belittle, you know, definitely thank you for the service. I know you guys do a heck of a job. And I mean, some of the stories that I've heard, I mean, I couldn't pull up on a scene and, you know, I couldn't do it. I mean, some of the stuff you guys come across is just unbelievable.
Saul?
Well, a couple points to that. Our pension system in Dade County is completely self-funded. We had the union over the years negotiated with the county, so the county ended up paying most of our pension. It was something like 15 to 20% of our salary. And it's completely self-funded. So we're not taking money away from anybody. That's in a fund, and it's invested and so on.
Saul, I was interested in your book, kind of taken with the section where you dealt with the ubiquitous fire hydrants, how much time and attention they take for the fire department.
Right. It's funny that
beside the neighborhood dogs, I guess.
Right. It's funny that I could devote a whole chapter just to painting fire hydrants, but it's... I used to work for a captain who was a stickler that we painted every fire hydrant if it just
and you had to check the valves and grease
right.
them.
Right. Yeah, that's taken for granted. You know, we have to do that. So when we pull up to a fire hydrant, we can rest assured that it's functioning and we can get the caps off. But the painting is the problem. So
why did he want them painted?
I don't know if he was
never
trying.
Never figured it out.
No. And I don't know if he was trying to get back at us or...
Well, if I was in a neighborhood and I had an old rusty fire hydrant, I'd rather have it painted a nice green.
That's true.
Right, but it wasn't even his neighborhood.
Well, he was thinking of those whose neighborhood it was.
His taxpayers.
Yeah. I was surprised about all the babies you delivered, and I don't know why I was, because it just makes a lot of sense. But tell us more about that, delivering babies, and have you ever developed a relationship with any of the babies... the families of the babies you delivered?
Yes. It's funny because when I travel, especially in Russia, and I tell people we deliver babies, they can't believe that the firemen would deliver babies. They just can't believe it.
Yeah, I found it hard.
But
surprising.
In certain areas of Miami, we deliver a lot more than other areas because the people don't have cars or they've had so many babies that they come very quickly after the second.
Saul, I'm told there's a photo of you on our Facebook page or the website. on the website, WLRN.org, of you with the baby.
Right. Now, that baby is, I do have a relationship with the parents. We delivered that baby, and we went back like a month later to see how he was doing, mm-hmm. and I held the baby in my arms. That's why he looks like a month-old baby. I didn't just deliver him.
Right.
And this man actually worked in a nursery that I used to visit, a plant nursery. So I recognized him when I went to the house to deliver the baby. So I would talk to him occasionally over the years, and yeah.
So what do you, I mean, that's almost like you have to be skilled in obstetrics.
Yeah, we go through a lot of classes, and we spend a few shifts in the labor and delivery section of Jackson Memorial Hospital and assist the doctors and nurses delivering babies before we get certified as paramedics. The best story about delivering babies, we had a call 3 o'clock in the morning. And we got it as a miscarriage. So we rolled out of bed and we got to the apartment complex and a young guy was waving us down, which is always a friendly gesture so we know exactly which building to go to at night. But it also means that it's a more serious call, that they want us to get there quickly. Mm-hmm. So we went upstairs and we were summoned to the bathroom and there was a girl or a woman sitting on the toilet and there was another woman kneeling next to her holding a bundle with towels. And by that time I was fully awake. You know, I hadn't been awake up until that moment. And it looked like an umbilical cord running from the towel into the toilet. And the whole thing was surreal.
Where are we going with this?
Yeah.
No, it's good. It's good.
Okay.
It was a good start.
So yeah. So I, all of a sudden I was in charge that day because I was an acting lieutenant. And so everything was my responsibility. So I peeled away the towel, expecting to see maybe a stillborn, but it was a beautiful, healthy, pink, breathing baby. And the umbilical cord, of course, was still attached. The girl ended up being 15 years old. I don't even know if she knew she was pregnant. She went to the toilet in the middle of the night and had the baby in the toilet and yelled. Her parents came in, and everything worked out great.
I'm glad to hear that. Yeah. Nicholas wants to know, what do you do when there are people in the building but you can't see and you can't get into the building? It's hard to get into the building.
We have to get in. What we do is we walk around the building to make sure we don't see any lights, or we look for an open window or an open door. And if we can't find anything open, we have the alarm office call them back to see if it really came from that apartment or that house. Mm-hmm. So if we hear the phone ring, we know that, you know, the call originated from that house. And then we have to break in. We usually call the police. If we have a feeling it's a medical emergency, then we'll break in. But if we think it's not so important, we'll wait for the police to come and let them break in. But yeah, we have to go inside. That's what those medical alert signals are for. Somebody needs help, and if we have to break a window or a door, we break
it. You do.
We do.
Let's take another caller. This is Mike in Sunrise. Go ahead, Mike.
Hi, thanks for having me on, and so thank you for your 25 years of service, but your 25 years of service sounds very different than mine. I'm a career firefighter with 30-plus years. And your experiences seem very different, even the use of the term fireman. I abandoned the word fireman, gosh, 20 years ago, out of concern that every time I used the word, it sent a message to a 12-year-old girl somewhere that she really needn't consider the fire service as a viable career. And I realize it's just a word, but sometimes our words have importance. And I was a little surprised to hear the comments about the protective hood and that you made a decision not to wear it and instead wore it on your skiing trips. And quite candidly, I find it kind of irresponsible when safety equipment is provided that many firefighters work really hard to try to get and then to have it used in that fashion. So again, your career sounds really different than mine, and they've both been in Florida.
Saul, you want to answer 2 points he made?
Well, the fire hood, for 15 years, we didn't even have them. And then yeah, maybe it is a safety issue, or maybe it isn't. To me, I thought it was safer for me to have my ears get burned and to know I was in a superheated atmosphere than to have the hood and maybe have the equipment malfunction because of the heat being too hot and me not
realizing. And the term fireman versus firefighter.
Right. Yeah, that's come up a few times. But when I got on, there were no women. And I just like the word fireman. When I was growing up, you know, fireman, save my child. And I know it's politically correct to use firefighter, but like you said, it's just a word. And, you know, I wrote a book and, yeah, I just chose to use the word fireman. It's just
even,
that simple.
Do you say firewoman?
No. And I asked a couple of the women on the fire department who read the book, and I asked them if they were offended at all. And one of them said, no, you know, I take it as a compliment, you know, being called a fireman.
We're speaking with Saul Wiesenthal. He's a veteran of 25 years as a firefighter and paramedic. And his book is Oh, So You're a Fireman. One more short break, and we'll be back.
And it is today's topical currents, Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, Saul Wiesenthal. He's a retired Miami-Dade firefighter. And tell me, Saul, what about when you're on a call and the sirens are going and you've got that big horn and people in the traffic don't pull over and make wave? How do you react to that?
I drove the rescue most of the... I drove the fire truck a few times, you know. Maybe.
Some people kind of panic too.
Right. So you have to be aware that they are going to panic, and a lot of people have their windows rolled up with the air conditioner and the radio on, mm-hmm. so they don't hear you. And to get up right behind them and hit that real loud air horn, they
Ooh.
Do panic. And you know, we're not supposed to break the law when we drive the fire trucks. We're not supposed to go through red lights or speed. We're allowed to. But if push comes to shove, we're the ones responsible. We have to take all the precautions not to get into an accident and not to cause an accident, which has happened quite a few times, cars running into each other. So it's difficult. You have to pay attention. You have to be patient. And I once worked with a lieutenant, and he said, you know, if you get to the fire, to the rescue call 20 seconds later or 40 seconds later, it's not going to make a big difference.
So what should drivers do? Just try and get to the right?
Right. Or not necessarily to the right. If they're in the left lane, then they should pull over to the left. If they're near the right lane, sure.
You mean the fire truck.
To get to the shoulder, if possible.
Yeah. Right. Get to a shoulder, either left or right. And, yeah, don't follow behind us.
Oh, yeah. I see that sometimes. We have another emailer. This was something I was going to ask you about, high-rises. What's it like fighting a fire in a high-rise? And she asked, is there a law that residents must have roof access? It seems it would be crucial in a fire, in a high rise.
Well, it's not possible to have roof access. You mean with a staircase going up or just?
I suppose.
It just says, is there a law that residents.
Because you have to stay out of elevators, right?
Right. So I guess she probably means a staircase going
yes.
up. Yes. Yeah, that. Well, not so much up. No, not to the roof. But going down, yeah, there's always, they have to have access going down to the ground, but not to the roof, because we can't have people just climbing up to the roof and falling off. So if you can get up, you can just get down, because the smoke always rises, so it's probably clearer.
So it's better to go down.
To go down, yes.
What's the psychological toll of being constantly exposed to so much injury and death and gore?
It's tough, and each guy handles it differently. And that one caller said that I think it was a mistake that the wife didn't want the fireman to talk about it at home. That might have been his release to get it out of his system or to have somebody else, you know what he was going through.
And didn't she say he suffered from post-traumatic stress disorder?
We all do to a certain mm-hmm. degree. And like I wrote everything down, so that was my release. And I felt, if you talk to firemen, they say it doesn't affect them, but it does. We have a big, big problem with burnout. And a lot of the guys, to get away from the burnout, they grow from the rescue truck onto the fire truck. believe it or not, it's much less stressful riding a fire truck, only because you don't go to so many calls. And the medical calls are what burn us out, not so much the fires.
Really?
Auto accidents
and suicides and shootings and commercial accidents, construction accidents, and yes.
Do you think that your book would be helpful for a new recruit or for someone weighing the pros and cons of making this their career choice?
Absolutely. That's the number one target that I targeted when I wrote it, are people who want to become firemen. It explains, and especially paramedics, it explains exactly what we go through. It has a lot of different calls that we respond to, station life, the food at the station, the camaraderie, and...
How does it affect, were you married or are you at the time?
No.
Oh, so you didn't have a family life that would be disrupted by?
No, it was easier for me.
Mm-hmm.
And we used to kid around, the single guys, you could always tell them because they would come in and eat like pigs at the station because it was the only day out of 3 days that we would get good food to
right,
eat.
Right, right.
And let's take another call. This is Paula in Dania. Hi.
Hello. Yes, you firefighters, firemen are the biggest heroes. I know what almost dying from smoke inhalation is, and it was the scariest thing. I have a question. The question is, if I were 6 foot and could lift my weight, here's the question. Have you seen any really outstanding firewomen?
Oh, yes. Yeah, we have quite a few who are weightlifters and who could more than pull their weight. Yeah, if you're 6 feet and you can lift
I'm not.
Oh,
she was saying if she were, if only.
I know there's got to be some big gargantuan women out there doing good.
Yeah, yeah, there are. There are a lot of great firewomen, sure.
But what are the requirements for
Well, it changes
them?
From year to year, so I'm not up on the latest, but I know...
You've been retired since when?
2003.
Okay.
I know that the biggest problem for women were the upper body strength, like lifting things. And I remember there was one test that most of the women failed in the physical entrance exam was we were up on a balcony and we had to pull a big rope that had like 100-pound weight, maybe not 100, maybe 50-pound weight. And we had to pull it up two or three stories, just like we were, you know, pulling up some equipment. And most of the women couldn't do it. The men could do it without blinking an eye, but the women just couldn't do it.
So they're a very small percentage, would you say?
They can do that. But I know some of the women who used to train.
Did you say the entire force is like 20% women?
Well, now it's about 20%.
Okay.
So, yeah. So we get the strongest women, that's for sure. And a lot of women go ahead and train for months and months and months before the test just so they can pass it. We have a simulation test and they go through it and see if they can do it or not.
20%, I'm glad to hear it.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for your service.
Thanks.
We're a little short on time. We'll take another call. This is Sean, Miami Beach. Hi, Sean.
Yeah, how you doing? I just had some comments to make. My experience is I've been on Miami Beach Fire Department for 26 years, and I felt my experiences were very similar to your guest. And I can't emphasize enough how much people that are in these kind of situations day in and day out, that they need some kind of external person to talk to in their experiences to avoid burnout and taking their stress home, and because it's affected my life personally quite a bit negatively. But overall, it's a very rewarding career. And the other comment was on the 24/48. If you really net it out, we have a 48-hour work week, so it's not necessarily something to be envied, because a lot of times we get off, you know, I get off to work at 8 a.m. and I've been up all night. The first half of the day or almost the entire day that I get off.
Well, we'd like to thank you for your long time of service on Miami Beach, but we're just about out of time.
Thanks for taking my call.
Okay, thanks.
Good show.
All
bye-bye.
The best, Sean.
Bye.
Well, we've been speaking with Saul Wiesenthal, and he is a 25-year veteran as a firefighter and a paramedic. And the name of his book is Oh, So You're a Fireman. He also has a website, firemenbooks.com. That's firemenbooks.com. And we'll have a link to that on our website. Saul, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
And thanks for listening. Apologies to those callers we couldn't get to. Topical Currents is produced by Richard Ives, technical direction from online producer Paul Leary. And we have free audio archives and downloads at our website, WLRN.org. Also, more information, book links, and discussion at the Topical Currents Facebook page. Tomorrow's program is with celebrated journalist and author T.D. Allman. He's updated and revised his award-winning 1987 book, Miami, City of the Future. It teems with money, poverty, exotic cargo, and immigrants from all corners of the world. And the calendar. On this day in 1864, 150 years ago, General Ulysses Grant is named Lieutenant General by Lincoln, a post previously only held by George Washington. And on this day in 1909, 105 years ago, the birth of Florida Governor Leroy Collins in Tallahassee. He was a World War II veteran and instrumental in Florida desegregation. He was the first Southern governor to support it. Collins died in 1991. And one more while we peruse our secret files. On this day, 1951, 63 years ago, FBI Director J. Edgar Hoover relates that he's turned down an offer to become Commissioner of Baseball. He'd have taken care of any PED abuse. Ford Frick got the job replacing Happy Chandler. Bonnie knew that. So we leave with a blurb from a Lenny Bruce routine. Quote, all my humor is based upon destruction and despair. If the whole world were tranquil, without disease and violence, I'd be standing on the breadline, right in back of J. Edgar Hoover. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, thanks for listening. Stay tuned. Next up, it's Here and Now from NPR News.